If you would, let's turn to Numbers chapter 32. We'll be reading verses 1 through 12. I'll use this text to get our thoughts this morning. And the context here, as you'll know, the children of Israel are getting ready to cross over into Jordan, cross over Jordan into the promised land of rest, which was Canaan. It says, "Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle, and when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place that was good for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came, and they spake to Moses and to Eleazar the priest, and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Arnoth and Dibon and Jazer and Nerah and Heshbon and Eloth and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel is a land of cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore said they, if we found grace in thy sight, let this land be given to thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. We want to stay on this side of the river. We've got cattle. This is a good place to raise cattle. And Moses said to the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war? And you sit here and raise your cattle? That's what he's asking them. Now notice this. And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel for going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? We're going to be talking about encouragement. But here he says, we'll first look at, he said, are you going to discourage the rest of them from going? They're going to say, why should we go over? Why can't we just stay here too? And he said, thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. This is what happened 40 years ago. For when they went up into the valley of Esco and they saw the land, they saw it was a good land. They discouraged the hearts of the children of Israel that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. They discouraged them. They said, we can't go in. And the Lord's anger was kindled at the same time, and he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they've not wholly followed me. Say Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenite, and Joshua the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. As I said, as Moses told them, he said, you'll discourage the rest of the people. As I thought about this, what they would do or didn't do would have an effect on everyone else, whether for good or evil. He said, if you won't stay here, I know what'll happen. He said, I know this from history because I saw it 40 years ago. This is Joshua talking or Moses talking. He said, you'll discourage them. They discouraged the people and they made them afraid. Afraid. You think of discouraged. Where's the courage at? Caleb had courage. He wholly followed the Lord. The rest of them said, they said they're giants in land, and they didn't even think about all the promises of God. They're so discouraged, so beat down. Discouragement is an awful thing. God help us to not be like those 10 spies that brought about discouragement in the rest of the camp. What is discouragement? To extinguish the courage, to dishearten, to depress the spirit, to deprive of confidence. Courage, that quality of mind which enables men to encounter danger and difficulties with firmness or without fear of depression. That's what Caleb had. He said, everybody said, oh, we can't go in there. Well, God said we could. God promised it to us. Caleb said, we can go right now. Why? What made the difference? He had courage and everybody else was discouraged. You may think this is corny, but it stuck in my mind. Sandy's got a little sign out on our front porch. And he says, you know what courage is? It was written by John Wayne. He said it's being scared to death and saddling up anyway. Scared to death. Yeah, there are giants in the land. There's no doubting that. But they had the courage, and they said, and he said, you'll discourage them. You know what Rahab said when the children of Israel finally crossed into Canaan? You remember the first city they're going to take was Jericho. Here's what she said. We've heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea for you when you come out of Egypt. That's something that happened 40 years ago. And what you did to the two kings of the Amorites on the other side of the Jordan, we heard what you did to them, what your God did. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts did melt, and there remained no more courage in any man. They're not courageous, they're discouraged, they're terrified. That's what discouragement is. It's almost being just plumb terrified. Terrified. I thought this was ironic. When the Lord's encouraging, he's encouraging Joshua to go into Canaan. What will he need? He'll need to be strong and of good courage. He says in Joshua chapter 1 verse 6, be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do all that the law which Moses thy servant commanded thee. Turn not from the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. How do we become discouraged? By listening to unbelief. Like those men said, it's a good land. They had evidence of it. They had that big pile of grapes. But there's giants in the land. And we looked like grasshoppers to those giants. Basically, they said, we can't do this. Well, I know you can't do it. The battle's not yours. The battle's the Lord's. When we think we can, that's not courage. That's stupidity. Really, I mean, when we think it's not, that's a false courage. Because the next day, those same people that wouldn't go in the day before, they said, we're going to go in. We've slept on this thing. I think we can go in. Moses didn't go up. The ark didn't go up. And they thought they could go in, and they got whooped. That wasn't courage. That was insanity. But I thought about when Nehemiah was building those walls. Remember, it talked about all the rubbish. You can imagine coming in where it's a place that had been neglected for years. The vines and everything's growing over the walls. What walls were left? They're charred where they were burned. And they're working on these walls. And the enemy, all they want to do is hinder it. And if Satan can't work from without, he'll work from within. And Judah, in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 10. Now Judah, the lion of the tribe of Judah, Christ that will come through Judah. Not someone, they're all important tribes, but this is Judah. You know what Judah said? The strength of the bearers of burden is decayed. And there's much rubbish. Yeah, there's a bunch of rubbish. And we're just not able to build the wall. Can you imagine what everybody else thought? There is just too much rubbish, Jim. No question about that. But you know what? Even Judah, if he's not careful, can discourage other people because of just unbelief. Another example. I thought about when David, talk about being discouraged. He comes back to Ziklag. Now, most of y'all know that Ziklag was the city that was given unto David when he lived among the Philistines. And you go, why in the world was he living among the Philistines? I tell you one thing, he was discouraged. He was discouraged when he moved there. Because one place he said, I'm only a step between me and death. He said, one day King Saul's going to kill me. No, he's not. But he thought he was. That's what. And he's discouraged. And he said, I'd rather go live with the Philistines. And the king of the Philistines of Gath gave him Ziklag, and that's where he lives. Just place of comfort. He thinks I'll be okay here. Well, David is almost forced to go fight Judah. And in the battle that he's almost forced to go fight in is the battle where King Saul will be destroyed. And the other king says, we know who this man David is. Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000. We know who this guy is. He's not going to battle with us. And it was just by God's grace that he didn't. And it's a 3-day journey from here to where the Philistines are at, back to Ziklag. And before they get to Ziklag, they see the smoke coming up. I can see him say, David, what's that there? I don't know what that is. Looked like something on fire. You know what it was? It was Ziklag on fire. And it said in 1 Samuel chapter 30, verse 6, so David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. You know, I've always pointed that out. It was a miracle that their families were not laying there on the ground dead. These are the same bunch that we spoke about earlier in the Bible lesson. You know who did this? The Amalekites did. They came in and burned the city, and they took his family and his children. They took them all captive. Would you have been discouraged? Well, sure you would have. That's where David's at. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. And David's two wives were taken captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelitess. And David was greatly distressed or vexed, for the people spoke of stoning him. Of stoning him? Yeah, they're basically saying, David, it's your fault. Because the soul of all the people were grieved, and every man for his son and for his daughter. Can you imagine standing there, knowing it's your fault? Look what I've caused. Look what I've caused. Like I said, what David did affected everybody. But you know what David did? Here's the grace. Seems like everything's taken from him except for the most important thing. They can't take the Lord from him. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. He went from being discouraged and he said, pack up, boys, we're going to go get the family. But what I want you to see, he could have just sat there and been discouraged. You know what it's like to be discouraged. You know what it's like to be so depressed. You just don't want to talk to anybody. You would just like to go somewhere and crawl in a hole and pull the cover in back over top of you. But what I want to speak to just for a little bit is encouragement. I don't want to be a discouragement. By God's grace, I want to be an encouragement. If you would turn with me to Acts chapter 4, I want to use a man named Barnabas. And just reading this, putting these notes together, it encouraged me just reading it. That's what we were reminded. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. The righteous are bold as a lion. That's our courage. Our courage is of Christ. We have none in ourselves. If every time you look at yourself, every time you look in the mirror, you're discouraged. We get older. We sin every day. We're just discouraged. We convince ourselves it's going to get better, and it's not. Not in this life. And here was in Acts chapter 4, verse 32. And the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither said any of them that all of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things common. And with great power gave the apostles witness of the resurrection of the Lord Jesus. And great grace was upon them all. Neither was there any among them that lacked, for as many as had were possessors of lands or houses, sold them and brought the price of the thing that were sold. And they laid it down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according to his need. And one man is singled out. His name is Joseph, who by the apostles, they had gave him a surname, Barnabas. What does Barnabas mean? Why would they name him that? Why would they nickname him that? Which being interpreted is the son of consolation. He's the son of encouragement. A Levite and of the country of Cyprus, having land, he sold it and brought the money and he laid it down at the apostles' feet. So there's we're introduced to this man called Barnabas, who was just a man, just a believer, but he must have done some things that was just really encouraging to other people. I mean, it'd been encouraging, especially if you're one of those poor in Jerusalem, and this man, he sold what he had, and he brought it to the apostles and laid it down. And if you'll go on and just read the next chapter, that's real discouraging. Because there you see Ananias and Sapphira brought some land, then they lied about it, and they lied to the Holy Spirit, and the Lord killed both of them. That's not encouraging, that's discouraging. But what this man did is encouraging. He wasn't doing it for a show, as Ananias and Sapphira. But it's amazing, the Lord recorded it in his word and had said, this man, Barnabas, the son of consolation. Turn over to Acts chapter 9. This is when the conversion of Saul of Tarsus. God smites him down on the Damascus road. God opened his eyes and set him free. Now, what do you think the people in Jerusalem are going to think when they hear about this man, when they hear the news that he's converted? I just don't believe it. I've known that man. I've known him for years. I've known about him. He's a very wicked, self-righteous, religious man. He's only out for himself. If he claims to be a preacher, he's doing it for the wrong reason. That's basically what they didn't believe that he was converted. Because it says in chapter 9, verse 26, Saul has now come to Jerusalem. And we don't know how long it's been since his conversion. It could have been a couple of years. But now he comes to Jerusalem. Well, I want you to see, do you think they would let him come worship with them? I don't know if he ought to come in here or not. I don't believe, because it says right here, he essayed to join himself to the disciples. They're afraid of him. Well, what did they have right to be afraid of him? They didn't have any right. But there's some reason that they're afraid of him. You know what that is? God's not given us the spirit of fear, but power and love and of sound mind. And they believed, they didn't even believe that he was a disciple. So what are they going to do? Barnabas says, Paul, I'll go talk to him. Paul had heard him, Barnabas had heard him preach. Barnabas had witnessed. They trusted Barnabas. He's the son of consolation. They believed what he said. And Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and declared unto them how he had seen the Lord in the way and that he had spoken to him and how he had preached boldly at Damascus and the same in the name of Jesus. What an encouragement to Paul that he had a Barnabas. What a friend. And I could see him say, well, Barnabas, if you said he's okay, he's okay. I'm going to read you something I just wrote down this morning. As I was thinking there about Barnabas and thinking about Paul, the Lord allowed me to have a Barnabas in my life. And his friend was, he was my dear, dear friend, Brother Rupert Reibenbach. I remember sitting at home, let me just read you this, alone one Sunday afternoon. I can remember the date back in the spring of 1996, 25 years ago. I was down and discouraged. We had just begun a church. We were meeting in my garage. We'd started it in October of 1995. I don't know where my family were at. I don't remember that, but I just remember sitting there. I can see it just distinctly right now. I can remember sitting there alone. TV's not on. I'm just sitting there. And the phone rings. And it's Rupert Reibenbach. I'd only met this man one time before. I'd went to hear Brother Henry Mahan preach down in South Carolina, and Rupert and Gary Shepherd were there. First time I ever met him. That's all I knew of him. Well, when he calls, he's coming down the road from Fairmont, West Virginia. For this, remember when he always had the conference in Easter weekend? And it's Rupert, Gary Shepherd, and Ed Parker. They're going home from the conference. And it's probably a good hour away one way, not counting going back. So this is a two-hour drive here and back. And he called and he asked me, he said, "Are you having Sunday night service?" And I said, "No, we'll just meet on Sunday morning." He said, "Well, could we come by and visit?" And I said, "Yes." They drove that distance. Why would they drive that distance? Why would they want to visit me? I didn't know them hardly at all, but why would they want to come to my house? I didn't hardly know anyone who preached the gospel personally at that time, and they didn't know me that well. But they came up and we went out to eat. You know, and there's something about sitting down at a table, being able to get to know people. It's encouraging. I'll just share this. We just come to my mind. We have a lot of things we have to get rid of. They're called grave clothes. I remember when I used to think it was a sin, and if you think it's a sin, you just forgive me over it. I used to think it was a sin. I loved to chew tobacco. Loved it. And, but I'd hide it because I was kind of, I thought, well, surely it's a sin, but I got to keep this sin hid, you know. And I thought, well, I wouldn't dare. I don't know what these men think. I don't know if they think it's a sin to chew tobacco or not. And when I got in the van with them, just so happened, there laid a pouch of Red Men. I go, somebody chews. But you think that just means, just seeing a pouch of Red Men was encouraging to me. That I can chew tobacco in front of these men. And I don't have to be afraid of it. That may seem so simple, but it was not simple to me. We went out to eat that night, and it was the beginning of a great friendship. Rupert was always such an encouragement. Now listen, nobody knows me. They never heard of me. If you'd say, well, who's Mike Walker? I don't know him. He must not preach the gospel. I've never heard him preach, so I can't tell you if he preaches the gospel or not. Rupert had never heard me preach. Never. And he asked me to preach in his pulpit. That's something. That's an honor. I remember my youngest daughter, Caitlin, who was married last year. She was just a baby. She wasn't hardly a year old when we started going to Rupert's. He would often call me on Saturday evening to encourage me. And I'd say, "Rupert, what are you doing?" I knew what he was doing. He was studying. He knew what I was doing. He was trying to study on Saturday evening. But you know what Rupert'd say? He said, "I'm like a chicken out here scratching."
I'm trying to find something. I know what that's like. That's just what I needed. I mean, do you mean that there's somebody else struggles like I do? He may never knew I felt the same way. He would ask me to preach when no one knew who I was. I felt like Paul. Everybody was afraid of him. Who's he? Rupert was my Barnabas. I hope I can be half the friend that he was. I remember something Henry said one time. Rupert had Henry down every year for years. And they had a nice place. It was over, they had a place fixed over in the church. They had made a room which was like, when the guest preacher come, they could actually stay. It was very nice. And I remember Henry stood up one time. He said, "Rupert is the hostess of the mostess." That was just Rupert. He's just Rupert. Some of you may not know Rupert. And he was just Rupert. He was just Rupert. He was not only my friend, he was my pastor. Some of you have had the opportunity to come to a church where you had a pastor. Some of you have had times when you had no pastor. I didn't have a pastor. I didn't have someone I could confide in. I did not come from a grace church. I come from a free will church. And the man who claimed to be a preacher of the gospel finally proved that he didn't preach the gospel. But why would God show mercy to me? Brother Rupert was kind enough when my wife was sick. Him and Betty would drive up sometimes. It was about a 3-hour drive one way just to come by. She never knew that they were there. Well, I remember the last time she remembered it, he drove up that day and it was like she'd had a stroke. She couldn't hardly look. She couldn't see straight. Her eyes were blurry. And then the next day, she was on a ventilator, so she never spoke after that. And then when it came time for the Lord to call her home, he preached her funeral. And I remember the message he preached. Why did Debbie Walker have to die? He was there in times of great joy. In times of great sorrow. Then after that, he married my youngest daughter, Erica. And then I called him one day and I said, "Rupert, would you come up in June and preach a meeting for us one Sunday morning?" "Yeah, I'll come." I said, "Would you perform a ceremony when you come up?" He said, "Yeah, what kind of ceremony?" I said, "A wedding ceremony." He said, "Who's getting married?" I said, "Me and Sandy." He said, "I'm not surprised." Which was an encouragement. I'll tell you this. When I stood up and announced that me and her were getting married, a lady got up, walked out to church, and wanted everybody to know she didn't approve of it. We had threats if we got married, somebody was going to come in with a gun. You need a little bit of encouragement. And that was Rupert. That was Rupert. He came in, preached a message, and we had a few minutes like we do between some Bible class and preaching, and Sandy fixed up just a little bit, and she walked down the aisles, and we got married. And I'll never forget, he never told me I could kiss the bride. We walked to the back of the church, and I said, "I don't need his permission." But that was just Rupert. I'll never forget my dear, dear friend.
Through Rupert, he allowed me to meet other faithful men who preached the gospel. And I know Rupert. I remember him sitting there that day. I remember I preached him. I can't remember exactly the message. I remember I preached that Sunday morning, and he was on the phone talking to Don Fortner. He said, "You need to hear that message." Rupert. And now, because of him, I am very fortunate to have many other friends. And it's because of him. The Lord used him. You wonder if Paul would have been used as much if Barnabas hadn't encouraged him. And encouraged his others. Said, "Yeah, let him preach. Let him preach. I've heard him preach." And using Barnabas again, one day Paul and Barnabas, they were very good friends. They travel a lot together on missionary trips. And Paul, Barnabas has a nephew. In Acts chapter 12, verse 12, and when he had considered the things, he came to the house of Mary. This is when Peter was cast into prison. Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. This man was raised, Mark, in a Christian home. He was probably heard the gospel, and I think it's in Peter where it talks about he heard Peter because Peter called him his son in the faith. But he's got a nephew named John Mark. And down there in verse 21 of chapter 12, and upon a set day, Herod arrayed in a royal apparel and sat upon the throne and made an oration unto them. And the people gave a shout, saying, "It's the voice of a God, not of a man." And immediately the angel of the Lord smote him because he gave not God the glory and he's eaten of worms and gave up the ghost. But the word of God grew and multiplied. And Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem when they had fulfilled their ministry, and they took with them John, whose surname was Mark. Okay, they take John Mark with them. But in Acts chapter 13, verse 13, and when Paul and his company loosed from Paphos and came to Perga and Pamphylia, John departed from them and returned to Jerusalem. I wonder why he returned. I'd say he got discouraged. Now, you know, Barnabas is going to love him. It's his nephew. But I think he also loved him as a believer. So he leaves them. And he departs. Now turn over to Acts 15, verse 36. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, "Let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we've preached the word of the Lord and see how they do." And Barnabas determined to take with him John, whose surname was Mark. Barnabas said, "Let's take John Mark with us. Let's take him." But Paul thought not good to take him with him, who departed from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. These are believers. And they depart on bad terms. And I've heard people say, you know, use this different ways. And they said, well, that was the last time Barnabas was ever mentioned. But who did Barnabas take? Now, and even in the providence of God, Paul takes now with him, he takes Titus. And you know who Barnabas took? He took Mark. You imagine how Mark feels to be rejected by the Apostle Paul? That hurt your feelings. That'd be a little bit discouraging, wouldn't it? Yeah. Paul don't want me around. Barnabas said, "You come on." He said, "You can go with me." You know, you could see someone say, "John Mark left. He went out from us because he wasn't of us. If he had been a believer, he'd never left.
But Barnabas took Mark and sailed from Cyprus, and Paul chose Silas, and departed, being recommended of the brethren unto the grace of God. And they went through Syria and Cilicia, confirming the churches. Well, whatever finally happened to John Mark? The man who left the mission field and went back home. When Paul's writing his last epistle, 2 Timothy, he knows he's getting ready to die. He said, I fought a good fight. I finished my course. I've kept the faith. He said in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 9, he says, do thy diligent to come shortly unto me, for Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. And he's departed into Thessalonica, Cretan unto Galatia, and Titus unto Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me. Imagine knowing that your life's about over and Demas, who you thought was a believer's gone. And he said, Luke with me, the physician, he's there. But he said, take Mark and bring him with you. He's profitable to me. I'd say that's pretty encouraging. Oh, yeah, don't forget Peter. Oh, yeah, don't forget John Mark. He's profitable unto me. It says down there down in verse 16, he said, at my first answer, nobody stood with me, but all men forsook me. Would that have been discouraging? You know it would. But I pray God it won't be laid to their charge. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. Then Paul was writing to the Colossians, the church at Colossae, and he said, if he comes to you, you receive him. The man that left the ministry. I wonder where he'd have been if it hadn't been for Barnabas. You know who wrote the Gospel of Mark? John Mark. Why do we need encouragement? Because we all become discouraged. Let me just share this with you. As I was thinking, looking up the words encouragement. You know, parents, your children can become discouraged. And if we're not careful, we can cause them to become discouraged. It says in Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Brother Henry said, there are two dangerous directions we take in raising children. Either being too hard and unreasonable with them, or being too easy with them. Either way, children will become discouraged, spoiled, and rebellious. If we can seek God's will and not our own, God's glory and not our own, God's tenderness and way and not our own in dealing with our children, we might build a relationship the Lord will bless. I know what that's like to make your children discouraged. And when they're discouraged, you are. You're encouraged when God enables them to listen. When God gives you the wisdom to know how to correct them and when to correct them, how much to correct them, and the right way to correct them. It's not just beating your children. It's instructing them in love and mercy and grace. And then he said in Ephesians, listen,
chapter 6, verse 4, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up into nurture and admonition of the Lord." The fathers are first named here because he's the head of the family. And most of the time, the father is apt to be too severe and the mother too lenient. And I know what that's like. I know what it's like to be, "You wait till your daddy gets home. Daddy's not a hitman. I didn't want my children to be afraid of me. I didn't want to discourage them. You want your children to come talk to you. They have something that they're discouraged about. Say, "Daddy, I'm discouraged. Let's sit down and talk about it." I could see John Mark saying, "I'm discouraged." Well, Barnabas said, "Let's sit down and talk about it." Someone said, or Henry said, children can be alienated from parents and from Christian doctrine and from the church by unwise and unreasonable discipline. Give me one more verse. I appreciate your patience. You know, we are to encourage one another daily. In Hebrews chapter 3, verse 12, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be," and it's amazing how we're going to try to make a full circle. We talked about them wouldn't go into Canaan. They'd be discouraged. He said, "Take heed, brethren." So if you'll read that chapter, that's what he's talking about. "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort," and that word exhort means to encourage, it means to admonish, "exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." Jeff, are you down? You know, most of the time, this may just be me, when we get discouraged, we just think about ourselves. Right? Just having it so bad. We are. We go through trials. We're going to have them. But just to hear a word of encouragement. I hadn't even thought about using this illustration, but when we was at the wedding yesterday, after we were getting ready to leave, and a young lady came up to me, bless my heart. She said, "I remember the first time I heard you preach." She said, "You preached in Donnie Bell's conference in Crossville. In 2012, that was 9 years ago. She said, "I can tell you the message you preached." She said, "You preached from Psalms 23. I said, "Yeah, I preached two messages." She said, "That's right." She said, "You told the illustration about your granddaughter coming down. You've heard me tell it. Come down the steps, and the door of my study would be closed, and your little granddaughter would run around and jump in your lap." She said, "I think about that often." She said, "I just wanted to thank you." Whatever the Lord did with that message, he gets all the glory. There was a young man, same message, went to Bruce Crabtree's. He was only about 11 or 12 years old. He came up the next day after I preached that message, and he said, "Mike, I understood what you said." Lord knows when you need something. I never knew, but when I get discouraged, I'll say, "The Lord did that. The Lord did that." You know what I hope? I hope that's an encouragement. Jeff, you go.